Welcome to Conversations with Leaders on Tremendous Life Radio, providing some of today's most influential and inspiring leaders a platform to share their stories of growing up, what happened, and what they're doing today. Now, here's your host, Todd Weaver.
Welcome, everybody, to Tremendous Life Radio. We're in for a real treat, or at least I am tonight. We have Ms. Dixie Gillespie. Dixie's been a guest on our show a number of times. She's been a real friend and encourager to me and us. And she asked the other week if she could turn the tables on us, and she asked if she could interview me. So here we are. Dixie, welcome.
Thank you, Todd, and thanks for having the trust to kind of put yourself at my mercy, so to speak. I've been wanting to do this actually for some time because I love story, and I love doing interviews. I end up being on the other side of it quite a bit, so I thought, yes, I'll back you into a corner, right? So hopefully that wasn't too painful.
No, it wasn't. I'm looking forward to it. Really, I trust you completely. Like I said, I wasn't just fluffing things up. Since I've known you and met you, you've been a real inspiration to me and a lot of encouragement, and I trust you. So let's go ahead. Ask me anything you want.
Let's do this. Well, one of the reasons that I really wanted to be the one asking the questions and to have you talk about your story is because you talk about this being conversations with leaders. And I so respect those leaders that aren't necessarily up on the big stage, front and center, you know, obviously leading a large following, but those people that have that leadership mindset that everything they do is in service and sets an example. So that's how I see you. And so I wanted to talk about how that came about. Just to kind of set up the question, I know you would probably say you've made a lot of mistakes in your life, and I have kind of a personal philosophy that our mistakes are really just kind of setting up the gym. You know, it's like the gym isn't supposed to be an easy place. We go there for training. We go there to get stronger, right? So I think a lot of our experiences that we say, gee, that was a mistake, are really just, I set up a really tough exercise for myself here. But one thing I'm really curious about, in all the things that you went through and getting where you are today, what was that time when you said, I don't want to live like this anymore, I'm going to change my life?
Well, you know, I happen to know the answer to that one.
It's a good place to start then.
Absolutely. I was 42 years old, living in my last behavior modification facility, is what they called it. They changed the names from time to time. I was hopeless. The term I use is smeared off the map. I was just really tired. My health was bad. I had no money. Nobody in my family was talking to me anymore. I was unemployable. I didn't groom that often. I climbed deep into a bottom. And I'm not sure I knew at the moment that I... You know, it's hard. I don't really think I said, well, you know, I just want to do something different. I believe there was a lot of circumstance in that, Dixie. I just couldn't stand me anymore. I just couldn't stand it anymore.
And so what did you do? What did you say to yourself? What was the decision that you made that day, Todd?
Well, you know, it's funny. It's getting to what seems to be the very worst place ever, you know, through a lot of grace and not ever really looking back as far as, I only look back to see how far I've come, kind of, you know, became the most empowering moment of my life. Without a doubt, I believe that. So, but I don't, again, it's hard for me to answer the question I think you're driving at. I don't know if I made a conscious, somewhere internally I made that decision, but I didn't write it down. I didn't tell anybody that. I knew I was done living like that. I just couldn't go on. Because, Dixie, there's not a lot of virtue in my story, Dixie. It's mostly circumstance. I know today that I stayed out there as long as I could possibly stand it. I just couldn't stand it anymore. So I didn't think about my mother's life getting better or my community or my neighbor's life getting better, or I just couldn't stand it anymore. It was a self-centered act is really what it was. It was all about me, and I'm okay with that today. I just couldn't stand it anymore. But apparently I surrendered enough to allow some other people to show me a different way. You know, it just was like, I get whatever, dude, because this isn't working anymore. So I might as well try something else. That's the best answer I can really give you.
And it's an honest answer, and there's a lot of value in it that you may not even see, because, you know, you can say there's no virtue in that. To me, that says this is the virtue of being self-aware and being able to be, as you call it, self-centered. To me, that's, you know, that's that moment when we value ourselves enough that we make a decision for ourselves in favor of our life. That is leadership, right? That's what a lot of people that have been in your situation don't do, and you know that because you see those stories. You see those stories of people that, you know, they hit the bottom and they kind of keep going.
Right.
They really do try to live the rest of their life that way. They go in denial, or, you know, they take their own life, or whatever the case may be. So it may be something that you're saying, there's no virtue in that. I just hit bottom and I knew I had to come up. But a lot of people don't ever recognize that they have to come up, and they don't value themselves or their world enough to make the decision to come up. You know, I'm reminded of something that I read recently about how the effect of a climax comes after. So the illustration that was used is you would think that, for instance, the summer solstice, the longest day of the year, the sun's the, you know, closest, that would be the hottest day of the year. I mean, that would make sense. But it isn't, because it takes a while for that alignment, if you will, to reach a point where we experience the effect. And it sounds like you kind of had that same kind of moment, that you had an internal recognition, an internal change in your story that was almost not an event, and that the effects of that non-event came later. What did you see as being the effects? What strengths did you need to call on? What actions did you need to take in order to follow through on that internal decision?
Well, I think there was a level of acceptance finally. You know, all those years as I climbed down, you know, it's funny, you can tell yourself all kinds of stories, and maybe that kept me alive, I don't know. You know, like, it's not that bad, or tomorrow I might do something. But there was a level of acceptance when I ended up in that facility that, you know what, like, this is the last house on the block. You know, this is it. I just felt that way. So I guess I did. Well, I know I did. I followed the rules there, and, you know, for a 42-year-old man, the rules were very stupid and very childish, and I remember complaining about those rules to a gentleman that really, before I even knew what a mentor was, mentored me, and he said, just in passing, he said, Todd, if those rules are so stupid and so childish, why do you have such a hard time following them? And I had no answer for that. You know, those are the kind of lessons I learned early on that, you know, I needed to accept help. I needed to see where I was, really, and accept that there's only really one way to go, and that's up. I certainly didn't want to die. I know that. I wanted who I became to die, kind of, but I wanted to live. And I believe we all have that pretty much internally where, you know, we want to survive. So I started taking some direction. I did what other people were doing. There's a lot of defiance in me. Even when I thought I was completely surrendered, there's still a lot of don't tell me what to do going on. You know, it's funny, Dixie, it's my story. It's my idea. So I think it's a pretty good one, even though everybody around me could see it's an extremely bad idea, you know. So, but I, you know, there's defiance is an outstanding characteristic in me. I know that. I believe that anyway today. So I'm aware of that. And I started taking some direction, but only because I was kind of, I mean, I beat myself into submission almost. You know, you said at the beginning of the show, it's like an exercise at the gym. This was a brutal exercise, and it was a 3-decade event. And, you know, if I certainly didn't plan it that way. you know, I think I might have been a junior in high school, and I was voted most likely to succeed in my class. So if you would have told me then when I was 42 where I'd be, you know, there's no possible way that that could happen to me. But I'm here to tell you that's exactly what happened to me. So it's a long journey down. For me, it was.
And was there a time during that journey that if anybody had said, Todd, this is the life that you're going to be living, you're going to be happily married and you're going to have, you know, a house and a dog and meaningful work and wonderful friends and, you know, a level of success that, you know, most people don't ever achieve as far as, you know, what your reach and impact are in the world, would you have believed that?
It never crossed my mind, Dixie, ever. You know, that's, and I chuckle because that's, I'm so blessed that that's the beauty of all of it. You know, none of this, nothing like this would ever cross my mind. And I'm not sure that happens to everybody. Some people plan out their lives and they have great lives. They make sacrifices and do the right things and, you know, take, not that they don't make errors or bad choices, but they, you know, they're real resilient. They bounce back. They do what they need to. None of those things ever crossed my mind. You know, when I was 42 in that facility, someone said to me, Todd, what do you want to do? What do you want to be? And I had no idea, Dixie, that I never thought about it, ever. And, you know, I'm not real proud to tell you that, but that's a scary moment when someone asks you that. You think, oh my gosh, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know, but I suspect that anybody who says that they've always known who they wanted to be and what they wanted to do is somewhat self-delusional. That's my suspicion. I'm not sure about that one, but I kind of think that's probably true. So what about today? Do you have a pretty strong notion of who you want to be and what you want to do?
Absolutely. And I paid a high price, and so did my mother and father and community and neighborhood and probably 30 or 40 employers through the years, you know, to come to these, to what I believe today. But I have a purpose today, and you know, I still work, and I try to do the best I can. I try to be a good husband, a good provider, a good friend, a good community person, a good employee, a good brother, a good son. Those are other things that I never, you know, deep down I think I did always want to be those things, but because of where I got with, you know, with drugs and alcohol, that it just superseded all those. You know, I never loved my mother less when I was like slipping $20 bills out of her pocketbook. You know what I mean? I loved her the same as I do today. I just was really, I got really sick, and I was sick for a long, long time. So, I mean, I do have value today. I believe in myself. I believe in the programs that I'm in. I believe in you. I believe in people that are serving others, and you know, I believe in my boss, the owner of the company that I have, and I do have purpose and value today. And, you know, the value piece, Dixie, I believe is huge for all of us. You know, that, you know, my sister passed away last year. The cause of death was officially noted as an accidental overdose. There was a lot of mental illness. You know, suicides are around. We see people paying the ultimate price. And I personally believe that has a lot to do with, you know, where our own opinion of ourselves or how we see ourselves in the world. And I believe that has a lot to do with value. I mean, having friends like you and other mentors and coaches and spiritual people continue to encourage me and lift me up and kind of reaffirm that I do have value. And I believe that today. You know, there were years when I wouldn't say that because I was either, I don't know, false humility or whatever it was. But I believe it today, and I don't have a problem saying that. I am valuable, and so are you. And that's how we serve each other.
That's right. And, you know, it's a choice. You know, at least I see everyone as having the same inherent value. You know, we all come into the world with the same value. But the value that we that we're able to share and the value that we have to the world after that is is a matter of choices. So one challenge that I'm going to offer you, because you knew I was going to do that, right? I'm not just going to ask the questions. I'm going to offer a few challenges because I want to challenge everybody who's listening kind of to the same thing. And it's, as you know from interviewing me, it's part of my story. And I think it's part of everybody's internal story, whether they're sensitive to it or not, is that we do start to question our value. And we do then question, well, is it just ego to even want to be valuable? You know, is where's the line between self-esteem and awareness of value and a choice to bring value into the world versus, you know, being egotistical or being needy or being arrogant? And, you know, where's that tipping point? And certainly you've never... You have yet to approach the line that I would consider to be the tipping point. But I think, you know, for everyone, the challenge for all of us is to look at our choices, not just as did I bring value through that choice, but also to say, with that choice made and that done, how do I now use that choice to bring value to the world? And that's what I've seen you do in your evolution is, you know, be very blunt, as you've just been, about some of the choices that you've made that you felt did not add value to the world. But you've taken those choices and you've made choices about those times in your life that bring value to the world that, frankly, you wouldn't have to bring had you not made the earlier choices and been through what you've been through. So to reconcile that, tell me, if you look at your life right now, what about your life makes you feel like you have value? Where do you see your greatest area of impact? And I know that's another challenging question probably for all of us, but but I really want to know.
Yeah. Well, I can answer that, at least on the surface. I mean, oftentimes I don't know if I ever really find out, and I'm okay, you know. The people that we touch, sometimes we don't ever know that. It may be someone across the mall that's watching. I don't know all that, and I don't get too hemmed up with that. But I on purpose, I put myself in a position to be around a lot of other guys that are somewhere in that mix of where I came from and where I am. In other words, you know, a lot of people, you know, I get a lot of phone calls from guys say, hey, this is what's going on with me. What did you do? And that's valuable. I mean, they're probably still going to do whatever it is they're going to do. And I understand that, you know, we kind of have to learn it through experience rather than story. I guess what's that? If I learn from your mistakes, it's wisdom or something, but I learn from my own mainly. But, that's clear to me that whole 30-year price, I want to make that valuable. I want to make it worth it today. You know, I don't want any of that to go to waste. So by me sharing my story, and that's the whole basis of this show, like you said, and your storytelling like you do, that's the thing. If I live that whole way and then don't tell anybody about how it was and what happened and what it's like today, I'm kind of keeping that a secret. I want to share that with as many possibly people as I can. So that's what I do. And that, I do that on a regular basis, and that brings me joy. It certainly helps in my own self-value, my own self-talk, I believe. It's neat, and I don't wrestle with the ego too much. I mean, I have it, but I don't try to analyze all that too much, Dixie. You know, it's funny. There's a great author, and she wrote somewhere in her book, "Uncovering buried treasure may require digging through a lot of dirt." And I thought that was written. I thought that was written just for me.
No, dear, I wrote that for me. Trust me.
But it's funny. We all have a story, you know, right? So if we don't share that, what are we doing? That's maybe self-centered. You know, I want to give it away.
You know, what I'm hearing, what just went through my mind, Todd, is that what the choices you're making now, not only sharing the story, but sharing what you've taken away from the story and the strengths that you had to develop in order to turn that story into a happy ending, it's really a way of turning what was a very high price into a very solid investment, isn't it?
Absolutely. And that, but, you know, I didn't know it at the time. I don't know it. That's what I said earlier, I don't really know what's happening. I did it out of survival mode. I can't stand it anymore. And all of a sudden, it becomes a huge value to me, my family, and the world around me. It's really wild. I love it.
Right. You know, I can almost guarantee there are people that are listening, gonna listen to this probably for some time, that are thinking, well, you know, I haven't made those choices. And, you know, we all make our own choices. And sometimes those have costs we don't even see. To me, I think the biggest lesson, boy, lesson is not the word I wanted there, but you know what I mean, of any story, any hardship, whether it seems like we brought it on ourselves or we, you know, if, boy, I didn't ask for that or it's not your fault or whatever, the biggest value piece, the largest coin, maybe we'll say in that, is that we look at it, maybe again to go back to that gym analogy, we look at it as a way of saying, what strengths did I develop? What awareness did I come to? What did I observe and what is available to me because of those observations that possibly wouldn't have been mine without that, that it really is an investment. So, you know, and how does that pay off? But it pays off for us too. So we've talked a lot about how you're using that investment of your choices to pay off for other people, which I know is fulfilling for you. I'm not trying to say, oh, that's all about somebody else, because I know you and I know that that's a fulfilling part of your life. But let's talk about, you know, your personal success with this show. I mean, you've had one-on-one conversations with some people that most of us wouldn't even dream of trying to reach out to. How did that come about? Tell me about that decision and that choice when you started down that path.
I love it. I'm like chuckling along here. I'm having fun, Dixie. I hope you are too.
Cool.
I appreciate it. A mentor of mine was telling me, I accidentally told the truth a couple of times. You know, if you go to enough diners and hang out with enough people, like-minded people, once in a while you let your guard down. And that's what happened to me, I guess. But there were, all through my life, just on and off, people would say, Todd, you have a great voice for radio. And I always remember that. And, you know, you don't hear your own voice the way everyone else hears it. And I kind of just always blew that off. And, again, I don't know if that was that negative self-talk or I'm not good enough, whatever those things were. But so when my life shifted courses, actually we were putting on an Emmett Fox retreat. And the topic I had to present on was your heart's desire. So I'm reading and preparing for all this, and we're talking about our heart's desire. And in there, you know, Fox talks about, God created each individual for a specific purpose, and nobody else can ever fill that purpose. And until you get aligned with that, you're always going to be a little disturbed. Now, I paraphrase that. So I was a little disturbed, and one day I just went online and created a radio show and had no idea what I was doing at all, never really thought about who I wanted to be like or what I wanted it to be. And I didn't have really a mission statement or really any goals written down or any plans at all. I just did it. And I started reaching out to people. And this mentor of mine kept telling me, Todd, you're four people away from meeting anybody you want in the world. Four people, that's the number. Just don't quit. Just keep listening to your heart. Just keep doing it. So I just kept doing it, and pretty soon, people with more recognizable names were saying yes, and I'm a little relentless like that. I'd send them an email, I'd contact them different ways, and in this day and age, you know, people are pretty insulated, and people started saying yes, and pretty soon books started coming in the mail from publishing companies and publishers, and so we knew we were bringing value at that point. We knew that people, I believe, are hungry for positive encouragement, spiritual learning, whatever the labels are, personal development. And the show reflects that. And again, it's based on the storytelling. And typically, I don't say that much. I know it's a good show and I don't really have to say much. I just ask a couple of questions and I listen. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, they're transparent. You know, they're transparent people. And I've just been connected. I believe that's the universe providing. And, you know, they say you should write a book. If everybody asks you the same question, you should write a book on that. So So I guess I should write a book on how do you get awesome, awe-inspiring guests on a radio show. And I can give you the secret right now.
Now you've done it, Todd. I'm going to be at you to write a book now.
Well, hold on. I'm going to end that right away because I'm going to tell you how you do that. You ask. That's how I get people like you on the show. I ask. Honestly, that's how we get them. So I can cut through the whole book. That's the case. I just gave away the secret.
So it's going to be a really short book.
I'll tell you. Yeah. Hey. Well, as long as I have a good cover, I guess we'll sell a couple. But, you know, that
– yeah.
But people like you and Bob and, you know, Tom Ziegler and, you know, all kind. I don't want to start dropping all kinds of names because there's so many names. And, you know, Joe Smith from down the street, he has a story too. And it's empowering and encouraging and devastating and tragic and joyful. And we all have a story.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that some of that and, you know, maybe even most of that is that we all want to identify with others, that we, you know, we want to identify not just with their success, because, as you know, there's nothing that exciting usually about somebody who, you know, was born with all the advantages and went the traditional route and ended up getting a great, you know, a great position and doing things in the world. You know, that doesn't necessarily maybe unfortunately draw the kind of attention that stories like, you know, yours and mine actually do. Do you think it's because most of us identify with hardships or with, you know, poor choices or with adversity as much more than we do with success? Do you see that in the people that you interview?
Yes, generally I would think, and I guess this is opinion, but I believe that that's the hope piece, I think, you know, that because pain's pain pretty much, I think. So whether it was a 30-year climb to a bottom with a lot of outside physical consequences and pain or, you know, I know guys that had hit a bottom and their bottom was a stranger's child looked at them in disgust in the grocery store line. You know, the bottom was the same. I think the bottom was, this got to stop, you know, whatever that situation is. So I think certainly listeners identify with, you know, the pain part, but also with the hope that, you know, that's my story and I'm not like that anymore. And this is what I've done to not be like that. That's the value. What is it? Those are the actionable steps, the things. And I'm not giving you theory. It's a fact because that's what happened to me. So I know it.
Mm-hmm. To you and to a lot of your guests, I mean, that's kind of a theme with the stories that inspire us. You know, is that point of pain and then the decision not to be in pain. You know, there's a blog post floating around somewhere that I wrote called, "What is your pain inviting you to do?" And I kind of started in that vein tonight of you're in pain. What does that invite you to do? Because pain is always an invitation to change something unless you happen to really enjoy the situation you're in, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So a lot of the stories are, you know, I had this kind of pain in my life, whether that was just the I have a heart's desire and I'm not living on purpose. And like you said, that alone, for a lot of people, once they become aware that they're not living on that compass point of purpose, if we can use that analogy, that becomes a point of pain, even if there's nothing circumstantial in their life that's painful. So thinking about what, you know, that universal point of pain inspires you to do, what would you say to somebody right now who has any kind of, as you say, the bottom is the bottom, the point where you say, okay, my pain is inviting me to do something, I'm going to do it. What words of advice or wisdom would you have for someone who's sitting and listening and thinking, I'm at that point?
Well, I would say whatever you don't give up, you know, live to fight another day. This might be a shameless plug, but I could say you could go get the book Just Blow It Up by Dixie Gillespie. Start there. There's a lot of actual steps there as well. But, you know, and roll over. You know, I believe in all of this. I mean, we're a species. You know, do you ever watch any kind of jackals or lions or wild dogs or anything like that? It's in us. When they say get lost from their pack or wander off and they're dying and they come across a hill and there's another pack, they know that it's a moment of truth. And when they enter into that area, they lay down and roll over and submit. You know, they submit. And that's the moment of truth. And for some reason, we just won't do that. We will not just, we will, I did, but not until it seemed like every other option was used up. And until I surrendered and really meant it, like really made a decision that this got to stop and I want to change. And then, like that wasn't enough, right? Then I need to constant application, constantly follow through with reading books and listening to people and asking better questions, asking myself better questions, and really listening to the answers, not just asking the questions, and trying something different tomorrow and trying a little another crumb the next day. My experience is that has so far really snowballed into a hunger to continue to learn and to continue to ask better questions. I'm probably just scratching the surface. It could get wild, Dixie. I mean, I love what goes on now. You know, I'm hungry to learn. I love it. I love going to bed at night because I can't wait to get up in the morning. It's like, oh, this could get nuts, you know. But that comes over time, you know. So don't give up. Ask for help and really, really allow people to help you. That was the question. You know, if you see something you want to be like, you got to go hang out with those people, whether you read their books, listen to their messages, see them in person, spend time with them in a diner, in a car, over and over and over again. And I believe you will act like the people you're around the most. So, you know, choose wisely.
Yeah, just like the pack that you were talking about, you know, we all imprint on the influences we allow to have the greatest place in our life. So, you know, absolutely, it's what we see, it's what we read, it's what we hear. It's the people whose thoughts, you know, permeate our life. It's one of those painful things that people ask me a lot is, you know, I have a friend who, or I have a family member who, and that's my brick wall, you know, mm-hmm. is, you know, these people and all that. And I have to say, but your choice to spend the time with them that you spend, not just are you going to completely cut them out of your life, but, you know, if you're letting them be a major part of your days, then that's going to be your influence. And mm-hmm. that's your choice. You know, you can't blame your choices on other people. It just doesn't work like that. you know, you make a really important point, especially when it comes to turning away from pain, to making choices to move away from pain, is that it's not a one and done kind of thing. You know, we all hear about miracle cures and, you know, the things that can just make the pain go away instantly. But the truth is, even with physical pain, if there was some dysfunction there, it's going to be recurring unless you keep doing whatever it was that made it go away, right? With fibromyalgia, I'm living proof of that. You know, I have the symptoms pretty well under control through neurological work. But man, if I don't keep up the neurological work, and if I don't keep moving, I'm going to be in pain again. And I think all of our life pain is like that. So you mentioned several things that you do to keep moving away from those pain that pain point. You know, the reading, the studying. Give us a little bit of that list as this is my maintenance program. This is how I stay away from pain. What does that look like?
Well, every morning I get up, I sit still for 3 minutes. I don't time myself anymore. And, you know, that may sound like nothing, but, you know, people that have never tried it, try to sit still for 3 minutes, preferably first thing in the morning. Let me know. And try to do
without
that
for, going back to sleep.
Right. Or try to do that for 7 consecutive days. And, you know, you'll see that maybe it's not such a small thing. I read a couple spiritual, simple, short daily devotionals every morning. I plan. I think of somebody to thank in the morning. I plan where I'm going to be that night. I try not to, and my brain, I used to guilt myself. My brain will shift into work stuff or other things when I'm trying to focus on that. And I was judging all those things too. I try not to do that anymore. Try to cut myself a break. And I know where I'm going to be in a position to possibly be a service, you know, in the evening. And I go to work. I try to, most days I do what's required, plus a little extra once in a while. That's usually pretty helpful. Those are some amends I make from all the employers I stole a lot of time from through the years. And that's, in fact, I had my guard down right there because I rarely ever mention that because that's kind of a personal thing. Those are the things I do. I usually have a couple guys here a week, one or two. We sit, we read together, we pray together. We pray before meals. I pray before business meetings. And again, that may sound all religious. It's not like that for me exactly. I pray to a power greater than myself. I'm not sure exactly what that is. I don't analyze that so much either. We call it God typically. I try to live with integrity. I think before I tell you I'm going to do something so I don't have to live with guilt and shame and go back into all that if I don't follow through. I'm dependable. I work hard at telling the truth. Things that may sound real simple, and maybe they are simple, I don't know that, but there's things that I do on purpose every day. And since I started doing that consecutively, consistently, for years and years in a row, my life's gotten a lot better.
Those are simple, and they're cumulative. That doesn't mean they're easy. So it's just like the neurological work that I do, which is functional neurology through motion. Oh, the movements are so simple. I mean, you know, if you can put one foot kind of out and tilt over on your ankle and, you know, just do a kind of lean forward on your ankle, put a little pressure on your ankle, you're doing the work. That's simple. It's not necessarily easy to remember to do it or to do it with intention, to do it with awareness, you know. So all of those little practices that keep us healthy in mind, body, and spirit, they're simple. But doing them consistently and faithfully isn't necessarily an easy thing for any of us. But I hear a lot of cumulative power and themes in what you're saying is, you know, so much of it is really about awareness of yourself, awareness of the other people, you know, the people that you're there to serve, the people that you're there to work with, awareness of the higher power that that you turn to. And I'm with you. I have a spiritual coach that I love. She says, I don't care if you call it God, Bob, or tree, acknowledge it.
Yeah, right.
and it's kind of that, you know, God is a choice of language, but your relationship to the divine is your personal choice. So all of those things, you know, a lot of cumulative power in all of that. You know, to go back to what you said about I kind of dropped your guard and the time you steal from employees. I think so much of that is awareness. So a lot, you know, that may seem extreme to you. I've worked with teams and coached teams and been on the kind of the HR loop for a lot of my career because I was a management consultant before I became, you know, strictly coach, personal development side. And I can tell you that there are a lot of people that probably did everything that you did, and they would never call it stealing time from their employer. Mm-hmm. I've had a lot of those conversations where I tell them, look, you know, when you do this and you're on the clock, you're basically stealing time from the company. And they're like, no, that's not, you know. So right. So much of what I'm hearing is about self-awareness and being honest with yourself and avoiding what we call cognitive dissonance, you know, that I'm aware somewhere in my being that I'm lying to myself, but I really don't want to take it out and look at it. And that is a source of pain in itself, you know, when we know we're living a lie and we're speaking a lie to ourselves and we're not speaking our truth. You know, that causes pain. So all of those points, really, really powerful for staying in alignment with yourself and with your world and with God. In that respect, tell me, when you do these interviews and you're talking to everybody from, you know, corporate success stories, entrepreneurial success stories, spiritual success stories, how much of what they share ends up being part of your life?
That's a great question, Dixie. And I got to say, I learned a lot more so far than I really signed up for. You know what I mean? That's the beauty of it. You know, I don't even really process all that for days or weeks after the conversation. You know, when I'm listening to people and I'm just intent on, it's a challenge to host a show because I don't have a lot of preset questions and, you know, I'm listening intently and then I hear so many things that I want to ask about, but I want to continue to listen. So it's always a challenge for me. I love it, but you know, because I learned to be a much better listener, I believe as well. So many of those things, and these are people that, you know, that can be in front of an audience for an hour or two and they get paid a lot to do that. And, you know, cause there's value there and they're talking to me almost, you know, just me is how I'm almost looking at it. Maybe that's self-centered too, but the information that comes my way, if I apply some of it, my life has changed, you know, this just so much in the past 4 years, just, I've been connected with so many just awesome people. And I've learned so many things. I don't know if that I'm kind of skirting the question, I guess. I'm not sure I can really identify exactly all the lessons and the things that I've learned from the guests like you and all the other guests that have been on the show.
Yeah, there's a lesson in that, too. And you can't see this, but I am grinning from ear to ear because it goes back to what I talk about a lot with ripples, right? The stone is not aware of the ripples it creates. You throw a stone into a body of water and, you know, the ripples start spreading, but, you know, the stone's got a place to be. It's on its way. It has no idea what kind of ripples are radiating on the surface or down below. And that is kind of what I'm hearing, you know, from all these interviews is every one of those has been a stone in the pool, and you can't necessarily say, well, that ripple came from that stone, and yet it's creating ripples for you and for everybody who listens. So, you know, there's that value, and I'm going to turn that around and just kind of remind you that you cast a lot of ripples too. And I know, you know, when I talk to you about your value and you say, yes, I acknowledge that I'm valuable, most of us underestimate the impact that we have because for good or ill, either one, we don't see the effect of our passing through the world because we're on our own path. So I think, you know, that listening ability that you have, and I can, having, you know, been on the other side of this interview, I can definitely testify that you're a great listener. You hear things that and pick up on things and follow up on things that other interviewers don't necessarily. And I'm kind of like you. I started tonight with two questions, and I haven't even asked the second one. So, you know, I had a lot of things I was curious about, but no set list of questions because I really just – I wanted to pull out some things that I see in you and see in your story and ask you to articulate that for everybody else. You know, I think the freeform conversation is part of what makes your show so different and valuable, honestly, is that you know that everything that you're sharing and everything that you're getting other people to share is coming straight from the heart. I want to go back. I know we're getting close to the end of our time, and I want to go back to that heart's desire, as you know, because we've kind of talked about the next book for me is about passion and purpose and connecting that to presence in the world. So when I heard you say, you know, that being on purpose and heart's desire, all of my radars went, we got to talk about this, right? So have you at this point got your life to a point where you can say, yes, I'm living on purpose and I am pursuing my heart's desire?
Man, good question. I'm not sure if I am there yet. If I say I'm there, maybe I'm going to cut off the next thing and get in the way of myself. I'm certainly on a path that it's a little uncomfortable right now. There's been some major shifts in our life here on lately. My parents' health just took a new job. Things that were uncomfortable. But I knew from asking better questions in the years that I've been doing these things consistently that it was the next thing to do. I mean, I trusted what was in front of me, and I don't really get too worried about those kind of things. I live on purpose. I'm not sure where I'm going next exactly. I keep showing up. I used to ask the question at our retreats, what do you want to get out of the weekend? And I don't do that anymore because I think it blocks us from maybe what we're supposed to be getting out of the weekend. So if I tell you, yeah, I'm on purpose, I'm on point, I'm on track, I don't want to miss the next thing. So I do pay attention. I think, Dixie, I used to live in the park and steal stuff. You know what I mean? So I'm doing okay. We're doing okay. And the lives that we touch are doing okay today. This is veering from your question, so I apologize, but I want to touch on the Ripple thing. It's hard to track the demographics and the listeners, but at least 1 million listens to the show with all you people. And when you ask the questions of the impact, I don't hear from those listeners or the majority of them. And who knows how their lives have changed by listening to, your story or other guests on the show's story. We don't know that. So it becomes almost infinite as far as what's out there in the universe, what the positive, the values, the stories, the actionable steps that you guys talk about. So it's hard to track any of that, So, but I believe that it's certainly, and even if we affect one person positively, really, if one person gets off the couch and, muscles through some of their blocks and blows things up, as you would say, I guess maybe my purpose has been met, we're coming on strong, I'll tell you that, Dixie.
Yeah. And so much of it, to go back to the ripples, and the reason I asked how much of the interviews and what you hear in the gyms, pearls, whatever, that are in those interviews, and you're saying, I can't really put my finger on it. I think that's so much, if we ask anybody, what did you take away from Dixie interviewing Todd? They may not have an answer. And yet there may have been something, a ripple that touched them that we won't see the effects of. It's kind of like you have the summer solstice and then a month or two later you have the hottest day of the year, right? So we might be having one of those events right now that seems like a non-event, and yet something's happening internally, and 2 months from now somebody may make a different choice. You don't know it, and that's so much what I hope everybody's kind of taking away, not just what they're supposed to get out of us talking, but more, them being on purpose and recognizing the value of their own life, just the inherent value of being there and touching other lives and being on purpose. So one of the questions, I had two questions, the one I started with and this one, and one reason I kind of jumped all over the, if I were going to write a book, because my last question, if you were going to write a book, what would it be about? And you answered that, but I'm going to challenge it because, that wasn't the answer I was looking for right now. Because how do you get such awesome people on your show seems like a tactical question, right? It's or maybe strategic, but certainly not a philosophical question. So, your answer is, what's my strategy? I ask. And I also heard, the strategy behind that is I'm very persistent. I just keep asking. So that's really a short book. What if I asked you to write a book that told us how you became the person that people say yes to?
You're killing me, Dixie. Good questions, man. Good question.
I've got less than 10 minutes. I'm gonna make them count.
Well, I'd like to really, I guess to tell my story. But I think that a lot of us want that, to be able to tell somebody short. In fact, what we called the show tonight, the high cost of low living, you know, how I stopped paying the price and started investing in me, you know, that's the message. That's the story. Now, how I put all that together, I guess you'll have to help me with that part. But that's, you know, that's really, that's, there's value in that. But there's a ton of books out there like that. Here's my negative self-talk coming and blocking everything off. You know, there really is, but that's the message, because I've already paid the price. So, you know, I don't know how we can help people be more proactive in their lives and not have to get to that, you know, that touchstone of pain or whatever it is, the catalyst that makes people go a different way. You know, I guess some people are proactive. I don't know. You know, I wasn't. It's certainly not my story. You know,
I think everybody has a different pain tolerance.
Yeah.
And I say that partly from experience. You know, I had fibromyalgia for going on 30 years, and I developed a really high pain threshold. Mm-hmm. And then once I wasn't in that kind of pain anymore, my pain threshold came back down. And so now things that really would not have fazed me during that time when I had severe chronic pain, now I'm like, ow, that really hurts. So maybe what you can teach them is to be a little more sensitive to their own pain so that they get to that point sooner, right?
Well, yeah, when you can't, I mean, we can't almost tell somebody, well, what I recommend you do is destroy your life as quick as you can so that then you can bounce back and, you know, go a different direction. That doesn't seem to be real productive information, you know. But that's kind of what happened.
But we can
maybe
get them to redefine the bottom, you know.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Just define the bottom so that you get there sooner. And
so
it isn't so bad.
If there's a way that you can just invest from the beginning, certainly, you know, instead of paying that price. So that, again, I guess it is about being proactive. And you talked about it. It's about asking ourselves better questions, you know, and that, you know, you have another quote in the book that said, life gives us all kinds of messages that can be used as inspiration or excuses. I love that, right? It's the interpretation that matters. But the first part of that you wrote, again, that applies completely to my life, you know. All kinds of messages I've given myself and have been coming my way, and I can either use them for inspiration or for excuses. And I was a victim and blamed everybody and made up all the excuses for so long, because it didn't seem like, you know, taking responsibility for my own life didn't seem, you know, like rewarding or interesting to me. It just didn't. Like, the price I was getting, it was worth it. What I was doing was worth it until it wasn't anymore. And then I couldn't stop, and then that's when it was really brutal. So back to your question, I'm not sure. That was a tough question for me, you know. And you've been nipping at me for a while, and I appreciate that. That's why you are the ultimate encourager, you know, and pusher a little bit. And I need those things. Hey, I know I'm flipping around a little bit.
Well, I just figure I don't get to read the book until you write it.
Yeah, and so Tracy says the same thing.
You know, you mentioned being self-interest. This is totally self-interest on my part.
Hey, I'm going to flip on something here. But, you know, a guy, and maybe there's a takeaway here. You talked about ripples. A guy, and you were talking about in management things and people stealing time, even though that word sounds so ugly. But a guy that always has shooken me up a lot, and I never really liked him so much because he really always, you know, rattled me. But he's been extremely valuable and useful to me. He said in passing one time to me, he said, Todd, how much do you have to steal before you're a thief? And that question shook me, you know. So, you know, those words like stealing and thievery aren't really very, they don't sound very positive. So how much do you have to steal before you're a thief? Maybe you want to ask your next corporate group that, you know.
That's such a good question. And it ties back to what I talk about with the abuse, you know, and with mm-hmm. having compassion for the abuser, because it's a continuum, right? It all happens on a scale, and there are none of us that can say we've never abused anyone or anything. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. you know, then you get people, well, I don't do that. Well, I've never done that, or I would never do that. And it's all just a scale. And the same thing is true, of course, of stealing. You know, we've all stolen time from our employers. We've all made or taken that personal call when we were, you know, on the clock hourly or stop to chat with our friends because they dropped by or whatever. It's on the same continuum. Mm-hmm. And it makes me think of the point that we were just making, and that is to feel the pain faster. When we call it what it is, you know, when we say, yeah, that's, you know, when you scream at the clerk because they gave you the wrong color of something, or you yell at the fast food person because they gave you a chicken sandwich instead of a hamburger, you know, that's still abuse. Is no, it's not the same as punching somebody, but let's call it what it is, because then you start feeling the pain sooner and you modify your behavior faster. So, you know, the same thing with, as you say, you know, how much do you have to steal before you're a thief? If you're upfront and as self-aware as you are now, sooner, and you say, well, technically, I just stole time that I was paid to do something else, and I wasn't doing that something else. I was doing what I wanted to do. Then it becomes painful faster, and you stop it faster. So I think that's a really, really great point. So I'm going to ask one more question if I can.
Absolutely.
Okay. So when you write that book, because, you know, I'm really not going to let you off the hook until you do. I'm terrible that way, but you said just ask, so I'm asking. What if you were to write it today, and this probably will change by the time you write it, and that's okay, but if you were to write it today, what one thing would you ask people to take away from it? If you got nothing else out of the story of Todd's life, if you got nothing else out of this book, what one thing would you hope people would take away?
There's a way out. There's a way to be different. You don't have to. That's my truth. I know that. There's a way to not be the person you're uncomfortable with today. There certainly is a way out. That's my answer. There's a way out.
And there's a way out of that pain. I love it. Todd, I knew I was going to enjoy this. I didn't know how much I was going to enjoy this, but I knew I was going to enjoy this, and I am so glad you put yourself at my mercy and let me do it.
Dixie, I appreciate you so much. Hey, and I know before the show I mentioned this, and you said don't worry about it, but I'm going to blow you off anyway. Anybody that wants to learn all about it, you can go to DixieDynamiteCoaching.com. That may change soon, but that's the place now. DixieDynamiteCoaching.com. I got it in.
You did. Okay. You did. I can't break you of that habit of promoting me. I appreciate that, and I so much appreciate you, Todd.
Absolutely, Dixie. It's been so much fun. I'll stay in touch. I'll get you the link over here. Really, you've been an inspiration to me. I don't know. You know, again, I don't see the other side of anything, so I'm not sure where I'd be if you hadn't shown up in my life when you did. I'm not really too concerned with it. Here we are today, and it's been a real joy. You've been a real friend, and we appreciate you.
Well, thank you. It would have been someone. You know, back to your There's a Way Out. There's also always
yep.
that mentor, that person there willing to reach a hand. So if it hadn't been me, it would have been somebody in my place, I guarantee it. But I'm glad to be that person.
All right, Dixie. Have fun. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. There you have it. That was fun. Dixie Dynamite Gillespie. Interesting. I know now how my guests feel. I usually kind of take that for granted. So I have a whole new outlook on being a guest on a show. Thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate all the support, all the guests, Ms. Dixie Gillespie, all the guests that have been on the show, all the listeners as well. We couldn't do it without you. Until next time, make it a great day.